Macintosh, open letter. Macintosh, print letter. Macintosh, fax letter.
While everyone else is still trying to build a computer you can understand,
Macintosh, shut down.
We've built a Macintosh that can understand you.
Goodbye.
Hello, and welcome to Locasty Mass 30 plus minute app conversation. You're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, he's been hard at work writing Leander Caney's new Tim Cook book, and he can't wait for Leander to read it. Lewis Wallace is here.
Hey.
I'm sure it's going to be great. We're all going to enjoy it.
Best Tim Cook book yet.
Also joining us, if he were an athlete, his ideal sponsors would be Budweiser, Stella, Coors, oh, and Lipton. Leander Caney is here.
Lipton's. You mean PG Tips. Or Tetley. Tetley, even better, yeah.
That's what your NASCAR would say. Also with this, his smile is so dreamy. Sometimes I get lost in it. Oh, Buster Heine is here.
I thought you were talking about Alex Heath.
No. Dreamy smile?
Yeah.
No. He can't even grow a mustache, dude. He's been rubbing rose oil on his upper lip. He's been trying for like a year and a half. Still can't grow one. You know I like that facial hair. Woo! What a show we have for you guys this week. Okay. Get the kids out of the room because this show, it's going to be rated X. The good, the bad, the ugly. The early reviews for the iPhone X are in, and we'll be telling you what they say. Plus, the iPhone X pre-order experiences. Now, this is not something that we would normally talk about, but this was a weird one, a very weird one. I had a pre-order experience unlike any other I've ever had before, and I just had to hear what your pre-order experiences were like as well. Lewis is going to be telling us about Apple's clever strategy to bypass the traditional media this week to generate a huge mountain of positive press for the iPhone X. And it pissed off a lot of people, didn't it, Lewis?
Oh, yeah. It's hilarious watching people.
It created what some would call a fecal hurricane.
Oh, what kind of genius would call it that?
Hope you brought your umbrella, my friends. And we're always trying out new things, so we're going to wrap up the show with an all-new What We're Into. We got some weird picks this week. I already know what Lander's going to talk about. This is an odd one. And one of the weirdest yet. And this is the segment where we talk about the stuff that isn't necessarily tech-related, but there are things that we're doing in our lives that we like or things that are interesting, and we'll be talking to you about those at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. Before we talk about the massive, incomprehensible iPhone X lines growing worldwide, let me go ahead and say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Do you not have a website yet? Are you still using MySpace to promote your small business or photography? It's time for you to get a real website, a powerful website with real power and beautiful design, one that will be scaled to any device that visits. Squarespace.com is where you need to head to start your free 2-week trial. You can build a website using their drag and drop system, and it is the most beautifully designed, easy to use system I have used, and I have used a lot of web hosts. It's dead simple to use. Anyone can do it. And anyone can manage it themselves. You can add the content yourself. You can add your social media. You could add blog posts. You can add new web pages. Everything is so simple to do. And all you have to do is just hop in there, pick a template that you like. You can customize it to make it look uniquely yours. I just can't say enough good things about Squarespace. I like it so much, I pay for it every single month, just like everybody else. And if you want to see what Squarespace can do for you, if you're ready to have an online presence to promote your business, or you are a student looking for a job, you want to promote your skill set, this is a great way to do it. Squarespace.com, get signed up for a free 2-week trial. And if you decide to continue your service at the end of the trial, use code CULTCAST at checkout. You will get 10% off your first order, and you'll save an additional amount on your service if you order a year of service up front. Squarespace.com. Okay, Leander, for the unlucky many, the masses that didn't listen to our show and weren't able to get their pre-order in and now don't have the X, and they decided they need the X in their lives, the lines are just forming everywhere, worldwide, right? And there's violence involved. People are engaged in hand-to-hand combat.
I know about violence.
There have been murders.
There's chaos. There's definitely
absolute chaos. It's upending world governments. Tell us what's happening.
Right. Well, as we reported this morning, there was lines forming all around the world outside Apple stores. People, hoping to get lucky tomorrow morning with the iPhone X10, and especially in Asia. So the lines have already started to really crowd out. And Apple's promised that there will be units available, but I would say that it's pretty unlikely that will last very long, if there are any. And there's some chaos. Apparently there are people in Singapore are already sort of fighting over their place in line. And there was a report just now on Twitter that there's six people in line outside the San Francisco flagship store in Union Square, and they're already fighting about their place. Who's the first in line? So yeah, it's going to be chaos tomorrow, and we haven't seen lines for a long time, have we? It was for a couple of
two
or three launches
since the six. I feel like is the last time we had this kind of fervor,
right?
And if you're out there, you got to be ready. You got to take some mace with you. You got to take a switchblade. Take something to protect yourself. You can't just go out there and expect to stand in line and lock down your ex without getting into a vicious cockfight with some other man trying to get his ex, right?
Right, absolutely, yeah. And then, of course, there's a bunch of people who are also trying to sell places in line. So.
Oh, those scum! Those scum!
Entrepreneurs.
How lazy have we become in 2017 that you're not even willing to buy the ex and at least try to hawk it on Craigslist or eBay? Something a noble scalper would do. You're so lazy. You're such scum. That all you're going to do is put your empty lawn chair in the line and then place a sign on it. I tweeted about this. If you want to see what I'm talking about, check out my Twitter, @Erfon, @ERFON. You just put your chair in line with a sign on it that says, DM me on Twitter and I'll sell you my spot for $150. I would take that chair. I would walk it to the dumpster behind Apple. I would throw it in. And if you came to tell me something about it, I'd put you in the dumpster.
Why,
too.
Why, man? I mean, I don't know, man. I really don't find it that offensive. I'm not willing to wait in line for 2 days, but and not a lot of other people are, but I'm, you know, so if somebody wants to make some money off of it, I'm cool with that.
The capitalist and Buster revealed. I think Apple should take those scumbags and throw them into the parking lot. And
well, how much were they charging? One guy was charging like $50,
$200.
Well, yeah, but how much of a markup are they hoping to get on eBay or Craigslist?
I would imagine, depending on the market you're trying to sell to, like if you're going to sell them somewhere, like maybe in Saudi Arabia or other parts of Asia, you might be able to market up $500, $600, $700. Something like, that's just a guess, but that wouldn't surprise me because in years past, that's what some of the iPhones were going for, double their cost.
Right.
So you're going to be competing with a ton of scalpers in line. You knew that, didn't you? That's why you should have pre-ordered And hopefully many of you did. From Twitter, I get the impression that many of our listeners did pre-order. And can we talk about the pre-order experience real fast? Mm-hmm. Because this was one of the most easy, seamless pre-orders I have ever had for any Apple product ever. The website wasn't timing out. I wasn't cursing at the sky and shaking my fist. It was so simple.
Did you read my guide on how to pre-order? Is that why? Yeah.
I read all the guides, man. Oh, yeah. But here's the thing about how to pre-order. We were expecting to have all these strategies. You need to go through the app and this and that. And I tried that, but my app wasn't loading. And so I just kept refreshing on the website as well. And then at around 12:05, the website started working and it was completely seamless. Not a single hiccup. The website didn't time out once. And I just went through, I chose the phone I wanted. I signed my life away. I paid AT&T, those scumbags, $25, their activation fee, which they raised $5 from last year. And then I checked out and boom, November 8th, shipment dates, or November 3rd, nice. Shipment dates, no problems at all. And what I was surprised about was even after I placed my order for like 10, 15 minutes afterwards, I kept refreshing and the iPhone X was available for November 3rd. The entire time. It didn't start moving past that for like, 20 minutes, at least as far as I could tell. So it makes me really think, such a conspiracy happening here. Like, we we kept hearing how the supply was going to be incredibly constrained, and we hear this every year, and everyone's going to be there right when the store opens, and you got to be refreshing. And yet, there were such a huge amount of iPhone 10s. It seems as though there was such a huge amount of iPhone 10s available that even 20 minutes after the pre-order started, you could still get one on launch day.
Yeah.
Leander, what was your experience like?
Well, it wasn't even 20 minutes, Lewis. What about you? Tell them what happened with you.
Oh, my God. Well, my experience was not as seamless as Irfan's was. I ended up getting locked out of my Verizon account in the middle of this. It gave me a one-hour timeout in the middle of this. So, like, I couldn't even... I was fuming for an hour. All because I didn't know what my Verizon PIN was. And it turns out I didn't even have a Verizon PIN. Why would I ever use a Verizon PIN? I have no idea. Suddenly it demanded that I have one, and after trying several times to get a phone and watching time start to slip and models start to disappear, finally it says you're locked out. And I'm like, oh, God.
But, that sucks, dude.
But to your point about maybe it's not such a shortage, I was locked out for literally an hour. Wasn't able to get back online back in there until like 1:15 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true that I wasn't able to get one shipped to my house, but I was able to find phones available for in-store pickup in the Bay Area tomorrow. You know, so tomorrow morning, wow. I got to go to Berkeley, which is not my favorite thing to do, but it was available. And I think that all dried up pretty soon after that, but it just didn't seem like it was completely like, oh my God, you just can't get one for the first hour or so. Anyway.
Well, I managed to get one about 4 minutes afterwards, and I was trying to use the app and the app wasn't loading. So I kept on like force quitting the app and then I would like reload it. And meantime, I was reloading the web page. So I had an iPad, an iPhone and a laptop all lined up. And I managed to get the website loaded. But of course it didn't, it hadn't saved, I'd favorited the phone on the app.
Uh-huh.
So I had to quickly just, whip through it, right? Choose the color, the carrier, the size, the memory, whatever, and then logged out with, and then bought it with Apple Pay. So that went really quickly. But then I was like, oh yeah, whoa, success. But then, I took a screenshot to humble brag about it on Twitter. And as I posted it up, I was like, hold on, what the heck? November, delivery window, November 10th to
2019.
Yeah. What the hell? So, I was flabbergasted, like it had already slipped like, and this is like literally 3 or 4 minutes past, right? And I thought, I couldn't believe that it already slipped a week.
Well, but, you're AT&T too, aren't you?
T-Mobile.
Oh, you're T-Mobile.
Same thing though, right? Same difference.
Yeah, but maybe there are more phones available for AT&T versus T-Mobile, because I was just checking for AT&T phones and I just kept refreshing after I had purchased mine and like 30 minutes. It probably didn't start slipping for 30 to 40 minutes. I don't really recall exactly what the number was, but it was a long time.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there in disbelief refreshing it because I was expecting to have, like 3 minutes before we were looking at 2 to 3 weeks, 4 to 5 weeks, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So which model did you get, Leander?
Just the 64 gigabyte silver one.
That's what I got too.
Yeah, yeah. Cheers. And someone said, I think the silver one seemed to be like, I think there was more black ones as well. There was like I got some kind of indication that was the case, because I could be totally making it up. But then anyway, so I didn't finish my story. So a couple of days later, I looked at the shipping times and it was actually going to be November 3rd. So it's going to come tomorrow.
Oh, they upgraded you.
So I upgraded, yeah.
Happy ending.
Got expedited.
We all love happy endings. which one did you get, Lewis?
I got the 64 gigabyte space gray one. That was the only model that was available for in-store pickup in the Bay Area by the time I was able to get in. I wanted the more storage just because my phone right now is a 64 gigabyte and it's like kind of close to being maxed out. Who knows? We'll see.
Mine is too, but that's the nice thing about iCloud photo storage or photo library is if you need more storage, it just deletes a bunch of pictures from your phone and you end up having the storage that you need. So I feel like 64 is going to be plenty, especially with the HEVC and HEIF video and photo formats that Apple implemented in iOS 11. They literally take up half the space than they did before. So you're just not going to be needing as much space as previously. So,
well, we'll see. We should be checking in like 6 months, right? So, whose phone is completely, completely and utterly full?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you still have your whole backlog of photos from your iCloud photo library, right, to sit on your phone. So, well, I'm getting mine tomorrow. So it sounds like we're all getting ours tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Nice. Look at us. This is unbelievable. I can't believe that I got one, period. This is not the way it usually works for me. I was expecting to have to go in my snow outfit out into the freaking elements and get one at the Apple store tomorrow. Lewis, let's talk about the media hype for the iPhone X. I found this to be really fascinating. I don't know if anyone watches YouTube. I watch a ton of YouTube. And one of the things I noticed is every YouTuber that I watch, they all had an iPhone X. They've been talking about them this week. And it turns out that was an intentional strategy by Apple, right?
Yeah, genius move, you know. Get it in the hands of real people, not jaundiced tech journalists. I thought it was pretty genius move myself. I mean, of course, you're a YouTuber. You're not traditionally going to be having, you know, the hottest tech item in the world before everybody else, right? And so they give it to these people, and guess what? They're excited about it. They're thrilled. They're not sitting there going, oh, well, it loads 1.2 seconds slower than the other one, and, you know, doing all this kind of, like, really, I don't know. You know, journalists we're kind of cynical. We can kind of be a little negative sometimes.
I mean, the YouTube reviews were borderline sycophantic. Yeah. Some of them were so sugary, I could barely make it through them.
Borderline?
There's some specifically that were way over the top, and I was just shaking my head. But this was a genius move by Apple because they preempted all of the traditional grumpy reviews that are going to be coming out.
That's a perfect way to put it, because I think they always are, aren't they? They can never be enthusiastic.
I feel like they have an obligation. They feel like they have an obligation to point out what's good and bad about a product.
They're always the same.
Whereas YouTubers are just going to try to make it look good because they don't want to lose their privilege with Apple. And so they're much more inclined to only focus on the good stuff than point out the bad stuff.
Well, not necessarily. I think they're focusing on the experience, right? They're like, oh, this is cool. And wow, look at this. This is cool. This is cool. It's like, they're not... Naive's not the right word, but it's a little more sort of... you know, pure or innocent, you know?
It's more youthful, right? It's like, hey, yeah. It's way more youthful. Like, the people that are making these videos are almost all under the age of 30 or very close to 30. And yeah, they're just not jaded and they're looking for all the cool new stuff to share with their users. And they still have excitement left in them. They're not like completely devoid of youth and excitement and fervor.
Plus, I mean, it's got to be fun, right? I mean, Apple calls you into some secret location and gives you, 20 minutes or whatever with this brand new thing that's the hottest thing. I mean, you know, of course you're excited. It's like being at front row at Comic-Con or something. You're like, woohoo, I love this. I can't.
Man, they need to give one of these to Lewis.
Tim Cook, are you listening? Here's your next YouTube star.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I definitely have a face for YouTube.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the funny thing is about the YouTube stuff is people consider more mainstream media like, I don't know, NBC and MSNBC and CNN and all that stuff is traditional media, but the YouTubers get more views than mainstream media does. A guy like Lewis Helsentager, Unbox Therapy, his videos routinely get, I don't know, 1 million to 2 million views each. And if you think of a show like what's CNN's most popular show? Is it like Anderson Cooper 360? Like, his show barely gets 2 million views. So when you look at YouTubers getting that huge amount of engagement and views on their video, it kind of makes more sense to give it to the YouTubers, who I think from Apple's perspective are safer because they're not going to say anything negative about the phones. Usually, most of them are pretty positive reviews. And you get way more engagement with young people. You get way more views of the phones. And then the traditional media can fill in all the old folks, you know, like a week later, as they're doing now. Because all the actual reviews are coming out on November 3rd, whereas the YouTube reviews have been coming out all week.
Well, a few of the, you know, traditional journalist reviews came out this week, but a lot of the journalists are, I don't know about a lot, but I saw several people say, well, we've only had it for 24 hours, we're not going to run our review today because, you know, we have not had time to properly test. And I respect that, you know.
I do too.
But it's at the same time, it's like such a I don't know, it's just two different approaches, right? And I just think that's why it was so smart of Apple to do this, because they're getting tons of traction. They're getting all this publicity, free publicity, by handing some phones out and showing some people some phones, just letting them go and tell everybody how great they are. it's genius.
You know what's funny is Unbox Therapy did not get an iPhone 10. He was one of the few YouTubers that didn't get one. And they gizmodo to him, man. I mean, ever since he did that Ben test video, Apple just cut him off. And it really sucks. He's probably one of the most, if not the most popular IT gadget channel on YouTube, and nothing, man. Well, they won't give him anything.
That's exactly what they were trying to short circuit, isn't it? That, you know, the tech media does stuff like that. They blend it. They break it, you know, they try to look for some kind of flaw. And like, you know, almost all the previous phones have been, you know, saddled with some kind of antenna gate type, you know, scandal, some kind of flaw, right, that tends to sort of dominate the news. And then I think this is what they're trying to get away from. You know, they're trying to put it into a different audience of reviewers, you know, so they don't have to deal with that year after year.
Yeah, I think this gate is going to be Face Gate. They're going to find something wrong with Face ID. I can already tell people are looking for flaws in Face ID, and we'll talk about Face ID in a minute because there are some flaws with it, and some people aren't extraordinarily happy with it. But if anything, I think that's going to be where we find the the gate, so to speak. You know, the gate is incoming. It's going to be a week or two. We're going to get a gate. We're waiting for the gate for someone to find that one big thing that all the media will be talking about for a week and then completely forget about. So, yeah, a lot of the iPhone 10 reviews are available on YouTube. It's a great way to see what the phone looks like and see what some of the marquee features are. They don't really go that in depth. Most of these reviews are very surfacey, and some of them are, like I said, they're so sugary, it's kind of hard to handle. But I do think it was a smart strategy for Apple to do this. And to your point, Lewis, I mean, by putting out this huge burst of positive media through these YouTube channels, they are kind of taking the attention off the negative things the press is going to have to say in the next week, because there are undoubtedly going to be things that the press, like the actual press, are going to say about the phone that's not going to be positive. But that said, let's talk about the early reviews. So the early reviews on the 10, they're in. And you might be surprised to know that The Verge said the single best feature on the iPhone 10, the one that trumps all the others, the Animoji.
Oh, really?
The Animoji, out of all the things on the iPhone 10, was The Verge's favorite feature. Well, they called them the single best feature on the iPhone 10 and said they're much better than a lot of the weird additions Apple has made to iMessage over the years. Like stickers, I actually like stickers. What the heck? But echoing that, CNBC also had a phone, and they said they work so well, it's bizarre. So CNBC also echoing that sentiment about the
Animoji. So did Stephen Levy and at Back Channel over at Wired. You know, that was what he highlighted too.
Really? What did he have to say about it?
Well, just he liked the poop Animoji.
Who doesn't?
Typical. Yeah. I thought it looked like a really cool feature. I made a little short on Twitch a while back where I was talking about the company that Apple purchased that's helped discover or create that technology, and how that technology is used in the movie industry to create the animatronics. The animatronics is not the right word. You know, all the face
motion capture motions, stuff. Yeah.
Motion capture
so
stuff. Exactly.
Andy Serkis, you know, Gollum. Do a Gollum impression.
Right. Yeah. Right. Do you want me to do one?
Okay.
I'm not going to. I don't have a good Gollum. I got a great Arnold. I got a pretty much A+ Kermit the Frog. But yeah, I don't have a good Gollum. You want to hear it, Kermit?
No.
Someday they'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
Is A+? That from the Muppet movie?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that for years. I remember I was on LSD when I saw it.
Of course you were. Of course you were. It was probably much better. Well, yeah, so Animoji. Exciting feature. You probably wouldn't have guessed. A lot of people were hating on the Animoji. I thought they looked cool. I was surprised that so many people were taking a big hot dump on them, but apparently it's supposed to be a fun feature. Also, let's talk about that notch. Some people still hating the notch, and one of the pieces of criticism that I saw that actually made me think, ooh, this might be a problem. So The Verge was showing the notch, and in landscape mode, you know, so when you're holding your phone horizontally, the apps can choose to extend over the notch, or they can letterbox and go into a mode where the notch is not included in as part of the screen. But when that happens, it shrinks the app from the sides and from the top. So you end up with a lot less usable space on the actual phone itself. And I thought Nilay Patel from The Verge made a good point. He said, well, a lot of developers are going to build the notch into the apps because that's what Apple's telling developers to do. But when you recall when Apple switched to the larger screens on the iPhone, a lot of developers didn't upgrade their apps for years. It took them years to upgrade for the iPhone 6. And so we're probably going to see a lot of apps do the same thing this time where they're just not going to end up being compatible with the notch for a long time. Agreement?
Same with the iPhone 5 when they made it the screen longer. It took a while for some apps to like really take advantage of that extra space.
If a developer isn't selling a ton of apps, then maybe it's just not worth it for them to update it. But even some of the developers for popular apps took a long time. So it will be curious to see how long that will take for developers this time around. But also just the notch. I mean, it's such an eyesore, isn't it?
I
kind of like it.
Yeah, me too. It's distinctive.
Really? Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't have one in my hand yet, right? But to me, it actually looks distinctive. It gives it a little bit of character. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what it's actually like. I can't imagine it actually ends up being something that bothers you after, you know, a couple of days of using it. And I don't know. To me, it just gives it a little bit of special something that... I mean, you know, that's the big knock on the previous iPhones, right? They just kind of feel generic at this point.
I have to wait to see how I'm going to like it, too. It's hard to tell until you get it in your hand. And what I'm expecting is after 24 hours, I'm not even going to notice it anymore.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard a lot of people say, too. Some of the other reviews talked about the home button, about how you will miss it and you won't miss it. TechCrunch said just after a week of regular use, the home button actions on the previous phone felt like way too much heavy lifting, and the iPhone X felt much more natural to use and not having to constantly be pressing the home button. But Engadget criticized the lack of the home button, saying the new app switcher, you know, the software app switcher where you press on the side of the phone and then like the apps all line up, said it seems slower than just double tapping the home button, and trying to close an app takes more effort than it should. So I think there's going to be actions where it feels faster, and then there's going to be actions where it feels slower. And I'm kind of expecting to find those little things all throughout the 10 once we finally get our hands on it. Let's talk about Face ID, though. Face ID Buster works great most of the time.
Super fast. I think there was somebody did like a comparison and said Touch ID is still faster. Just like by like,
right. It was Tom's Hardware
by like tenths of a second. But I think the answer to that is you like put the race to wake function on your phone, and it makes it quicker. Mm-hmm. But
I thought the race to wake function would have been automatically. Yeah.
So.
And then I think it was Matthew Panzerino, mm-hmm. who was talking about how Touch ID actually is faster than using Face ID to actually unlock your phone. But in real-world use, the Face ID actually ends up being quicker because you're not having to press the home button all the time. So I think John Gruber talked about this too. Like, a lot of people think of Face ID as an extra step. Like, you have to unlock your phone as you would with Touch ID. But Gruber was pointing out that you don't need to think about it as an extra step. It's just something that happens in the background, and you should forget about the fact that it's happening at all and just try to use your phone. And the example that Matthew Panzerino had showed on Twitter was you raise your phone and you press a Twitter notification, and it automatically just goes right into Twitter because you're not having to press the notification and then press the Touch ID button, which is what you have to do on your current phone. So there's a lot of situations in real world use where the Face ID is going to be faster because as soon as you lift your phone up, it unlocks with your face, and then boom, you just touch the bottom of the phone, you slide up, and you can get right into your phone without having to do an extra step. Did you guys see any of those tests where they tried to unlock the iPhone with, or the iPhone 10 with identical twins?
No, I didn't look at those.
So everyone's trying to like spoof the Face ID. In fact, every YouTuber on YouTube who got an iPhone 10 has all done the exact same video this week. Let's see if we can trick the Face ID. They're all wearing masks and that type of thing. But I think it was Business Insider that actually went out and got identical twins, And the Face ID was actually able to tell that they were different. And it wouldn't unlock the phone for the twin, but it would unlock it for the original person. Nice. So it's that level of accuracy that you're talking about.
And there's a lot of misleading headlines saying, oh, look, you know, twins can fool it, which I thought was ridiculous.
Well, I was just going to actually bring that up. So there were there's multiple sets of twins that have been used in this test. And multiple outlets have tried to do this test. And I forget who, but they had used a pair of twins too. And they said that the twins were able to unlock the phone. So I guess it depends on how much your twin looks like you.
Depends on the twin.
Right? Yeah. So your mileage may vary if you have a twin. But some twins kind of resemble each other, but they don't look exactly alike. Mm-hmm. And some twins look exactly alike. Like there's no way you'd be able to tell them apart. But the Business Insider twins, I mean, they looked identical. I couldn't tell a difference between them, and the phone could. That's pretty crazy.
Can we? Did you say they tried it with triplets, Lewis?
I think we should do triplets, and maybe we could get the double mint twins. So, come on. How many twins are there on the planet?
The double mint twins?
How many twins are there? I don't know.
I don't know. I think triplets is a great idea, though. That's a really good angle. That'll definitely get some clicks. Bring some quadruplets in, actually.
Sextuplets.
Centuplets, septuplets.
That's what you need to do is just up the game,
just keep going.
Everyone else is doing twins. We're doing quintuplets. Yeah, you're really going to raise the stakes on that. So
that's what journalists do. We're going to take our sweet time finding sextuplets and put it through its paces.
Yeah, there's no YouTubers doing that. That's what the real journalists do. We spent 2 weeks scouring San Francisco for quintuplets.
No, Andrew has actually graciously pre-approved flight travel for any sextuplets who want to fly to San Francisco for the
Cult of
Mac.
Okay, if we have any sextuplets listening to the show,
yeah.
Leander is going to fly you out to Cult of Mac World Studios. And personally put you up in his own bedroom to sleep.
In the Airbnb.
And we'll conduct the tests. That's right. And we'll use you for testing purposes. We're going to need to connect electrodes to your nipples and all that. We'll promise not to run too much voltage through them. And so one of the other things, though, I found interesting about Face ID was this was the Verge review. You don't hear a lot of people talking about this, but they had issues actually getting the Face ID to work all the time. And Nilay Patel was saying in dark scenarios, the iPhone 10 actually works a lot better than it does in scenarios where there's a lot of like background lights or in bright situations. And so he would try to use it indoors and it would work perfectly. And then he would take it into like outdoor situations. And then sometimes the phone wasn't able to unlock. He had what seemed to be significant issues with it. I mean, it wasn't rampant, but it happened more than occasionally when he was outdoors. And he was postulating that maybe because of the dot projector and the infrared sensor, that when you put it into bright lighting scenarios where maybe the infrared is being interfered with or the dot projector can't be read correctly, there's something with the infrared light and the bright light mixing that doesn't work well, that it was just causing the phone to not unlock. Mm. And so you end up having to use Touch ID in those situations, which is annoying, which is very annoying, because once you get used to Face ID, if it doesn't unlock, you're going to have to like go in and put your passcode in, and that's going to take a lot longer. And that's something that I think would definitely annoy me. So the jury's still out on that. Mm. I'm expecting to hear more people complain about that. What, Leander?
Yeah, complain. I mean, you know, like I think this is what, you know, I read the New York Times review and Brian Chan, who reviewed over there, was like, he was saying, you know, he said he had a few issues, but they were so rare that they weren't really significant. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you can find a situation where it won't work if you're looking for it. And I think that's what we're seeing here. You know, they're looking for situations where it's not going to work. But in everyday usage, it was, you know, it worked fine. It worked perfectly. It worked quickly. And it just disappeared. And I think that's the experience people will have.
I do think it's an interesting observation, though, that there are situations in which it doesn't work, but
not
Touch ID
always.
Mine doesn't work.
Not if your hands are wet.
No, not at all. Not for me.
You never get false tests? I get false tests still all the time, but maybe my hands are dirty.
Almost never.
Yeah.
Huh. Maybe it depends on the climate that you live in or something. Maybe because the air here is so moist that my fingers are just nice and supple and ready to be red. And your dry shriveled raisin fingers.
Maybe there's so much filth and dirt in your hands that they're really well defined. All the swirls and whirls. And
yeah, maybe that's it.
It's inconsistent for me.
Touch ID is inconsistent for you?
Yeah, yeah, because I got dry hands. I got really bad, scaly, dry, you know,
I thought that the new iPhone hands. Touch ID resolved that for you.
Well, what I used to do is I used to have to keep on re-registering my fingerprint every, you know, few weeks, like maybe once a month or so. But I started using my index finger, and for some reason that works all the time. But it doesn't work on my thumb. I don't know why. My thumb, you know, like it loses the fingerprint after like a couple of weeks, a month, and I'd have to reset it, re-enter my thumbprint. But if I use my index finger, it seems to work fine.
Huh? Yeah. Once they switched over to the new Touch ID modules, I stopped having any problems, and I never have to redo my fingerprints or anything, and it works flawlessly every single time. I guess the moral of the story is I just have the perfect prints, and so the phone just can read them.
So
really
blessed.
So blessed to have the prints that I do. That's why I can never lead a life of crime, because the cops can find me very easily, whereas they'd never find Leander since your prints are all mangled and weird and hard to read. They cause the computer to blue screen when they try to read them.
Right, that's my new career.
Well, Buster, let's talk about making the Face ID faster. Some people have been complaining that it is a tad slow, but there are some things that you can do to speed it up, right?
I think so. I don't know.
Do what? What can we do, dude?
Turn on Raise to Wake. I think that's you got to do that. Also, I think another thing is people are like waiting, like holding the phone to their faces and waiting for the lock to appear before swiping up to unlock a phone. Mm-hmm. And from like Gruber and a few other people, they've said you don't have to wait for it to do that to swipe. Like you can just swipe it and it'll unlock it while you're doing that.
So I think the key is to, again, I said this earlier, to not treat it as though it's a step that you need to accomplish before you unlock the phone.
Just use your phone.
Yeah, just use your phone and you just lift it up and then just swipe up to unlock it. And the Face ID should be working seamlessly in the background.
Yeah.
And that way it should be quicker. Another thing that you can do is disable the attention detection feature. So by default, the Face ID won't work if your eyes are closed. And so if you're asleep and someone comes to put the phone in your face, it won't unlock unless they pry your eyelids open. But you can turn that feature off and the phone will unlock without your eyes being open. And I think that makes it more versatile. So you might be able to do it from more angles and that will make the Face ID faster. But it also makes it less secure, so you kind of have to weigh the pros and cons there. I'm guessing I'm going to turn that off if it makes it significantly faster, because, I mean, are you guys really worried about someone, like, using your face to unlock your phone when you're sleeping? They could just as easily use your finger.
Yeah, not really. Well, they couldn't on the iPhone X, but, yeah.
Well, that's what I mean, but on previous iPhones, like, if you're sleeping, they just slip your iPhone under there, touch it, you wouldn't wake up for that.
Right. Really?
I mean, Leander might, because they'd have to go through every single one of his fingers.
I'd be bolt upright.
Who's there? Right.
Who goes there?
He lifts up his lantern.
After me, pieces of eight, are ya? I know, yeah, my treasure chest under the bed.
he's like Scrooge sleeping there in his bed. He's got his nightgown on, the nightcap. Gets up in his nightgown, comes and looks for you.
Fumbling for the candle.
Who touched me? Yeah, I think I'll probably turn that off, but we'll see. I mean, we're talking about like increases in like 20, 30 milliseconds here. Yeah. You know, like that's the kind of speed increase we might be talking about. It's not going to be huge, maybe 100 milliseconds, but not huge gains. But I was surprised to see that unlocking with Face ID, when you time it, according to Tom's hardware, is actually slower to unlock than Touch ID is. So Touch ID just a hair faster than Face ID. But, you know, it's negligible. It's like almost nothing. Is there anything else that we should add about the iPhone 10 stuff? I think that might be it.
Well, I mean, just at the earlier point, you know, like the Brian Chen review. I mean, the one, you know, the headline is like, "It's here, but are you ready?" And the sort of takeaway from the review was like, "Oh my God, this thing is fantastic," but you know, it's not for everybody. And it mentions a few like, you know, things like mainly about how you have to get used to all the, you know, with the lack of the home button, how you've got to you know, use gestures now to control the thing, and it's a bit confusing and a little bit, and it's kind of like, I think, you know, a bit, he said that he would recommend it to all his tech friends in Silicon Valley, but for everyone else, for regular, you know, quote unquote regular users, he wasn't so sure. And I think that kind of attitude is really bad. I think it's terrible, you know, to be that sort of snooty and elitist and say, oh, you know, ordinary people couldn't use it. But I think the whole point is that it is designed for ordinary people. It gets rid of a lot of the, you know, the sort of the barriers to making technology almost disappear.
There is a learning curve, though, I think.
Well, of course there is, but there's a learning... But I don't think that really is... You know, he can learn how to use it. I can learn how to use it. You can learn how to use it. All of our listeners can learn how to use it. Why can't, quote-unquote, ordinary people learn how to use it?
I guess it depends on who the ordinary people are. Like, if you're really not tech-savvy...
But you don't have to be tech-savvy. That's the whole thing. You know, the one point that stood out in his review that I thought was interesting was but I think it's misguided. He said that, you know, this is the first iPhone that the iPhone was famous for being, you know, you could use it without having to pick up a manual. And that was kind of true for the first iPhone. And he says that it's not true for this one, you know, because all the things that you relied on, you know, are no longer there. So now you have to, like, Google stuff. He had one of his apps crashed and froze, and he didn't know how to reboot the phone. So he had to Google it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so then that leads into the conclusion that this is the first iPhone where you don't, you know, that you can't use intuitively, that you've got to actually crack a manual to learn how to use it. But I think that was true anyway, you know, like of a lot, especially as the phone matured, you know, the first iPhone was so simple that, yeah, you could get a basic idea of how it worked, but there was a lot of stuff that was sort of hidden away. A lot of, I'm pretty sure that people didn't know how to reboot the first iPhone or do a hard reset without Googling it. You know, I think the criticism is completely unfounded. You know, that this is a phone that's more difficult for ordinary people to use. I think it's changed, and so therefore, you know, you're not going to be familiar with this stuff, and, like, you know, things like your muscle memory and also, like, how you do things like, you know, like force rebooting, you know, switching apps. But it doesn't take very long. You Google it and then you figure it out, and then you try it a couple of times, and then it becomes, you know, second nature.
I think the difference is that with a home button, there's a piece of hardware sitting there, and you know that there are interactions that you can have with the home button. And when you take away the home button, those interactions are moved into the ether. They're moved into the software, and you don't even realize that those interactions exist or how to invoke them. So I do think that there's going to be an extra layer of complexity to learning how to use this iPhone, because you don't even realize that there's an interaction that you could have because the home button is now gone. So I kind of agree with him in a way in that it is going to be difficult for people maybe who are less savvy users of an iPhone, because as you said, on the iPhone, the first one, it was easy to learn because it kind of walked you through it, showed you how to use it in the software, and this one doesn't necessarily do that. And I've been watching YouTube videos for days on how to do things on my iPhone 10 when it finally arrives, because I didn't know how to take a screenshot or how to do this or do that, you know? So I've been
Googling it, too. So you've been educating yourself. You know, you're doing exactly what you accuse, you know, like ordinary users of being incapable of doing, which is, like, you know, watching a couple of YouTube videos to figure out how to do stuff.
Yeah, but there are users like my mom, for instance. When she doesn't know how to do something, she doesn't Google it. She calls me.
Well, right.
You know, she tries to have me help her. And there are users out there who are going to not Google it because they're not used to figuring out how to do things on their own. They just want to ask their kids how to do it or something.
Well, right, yeah, but I think everyone's like that. You know, I there's a bunch of stuff I don't do that I do backwards. I know I do it backwards. I know there's an easier way, but I can't be bothered to learn how to do it, so.
You just ask your kids how to do it?
Yeah, well, to do it for me, right.
Oh, man, so I had a revelatory moment with my daughter the other day. For the first time, I didn't know where something was, and I was like, hey, Eleanor, do you know where this thing is? And she walked me over to it and showed me where it was. And I was like, this is the first day of the rest of my life. Like, you know, like when you get to this point where you're like, you don't know how to do something.
How do I change the channels on the TV? Where's my shows? I can't watch my show.
She's only two. She's two. And she knew where something was. And I had that moment where I'm like, my daughter knows something that I don't know.
Well, I do.
No, that's an amazing moment as a papa to have.
Yeah,
it was a cool moment. Cool moment too. I was like, soon enough, you'll be showing me how to use my iPad.
Yeah, totally.
I'll be like, I need to do this iPad for this show. How do I use it? Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about the things that we're into. I got such a hot one, such a sensual one this week. Probably one of the most sensual ones I've ever pitched on the show. What's that?
No.
Buster, do you have something that you want to pitch?
Rock climbing. I'm into rock climbing now. That's pretty cool.
Are you jumping off anything when you get to the top?
Yeah, it's kind of like training for stuff to do that. Yeah, and like canyoneering to other stuff.
And what?
Like canyoneering, like rappelling down like canyons and then like jumping off a waterfall.
Oh, really? Are you ever going to get into climbing up to like a tall peak, putting on a parachute and jumping off? And
dude, I might. I actually, this one guy, his name's Adrenaline Addiction on Instagram. He's here in Arizona this weekend. And he was just in Yosemite like 2 weeks ago, and he base jumps, and he base jumped El Capitan and Half Dome at Yosemite, and he showed me the video footage, and I was like, yeah, we got to get on that level.
Base wow, jumping. If you ever get good at that, can you take me tandem?
I don't know if I could hold you. We'll see.
I'll just hold on, man. Right. I'll just get on the back. Hold on. How hard could that be?
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Well, you know what we should get good at is slip. We should get like those squirrel suits.
Yeah.
You know?
Dude, yeah.
Leander, you should come with. You're coming with.
Are you joking? There's no way like that.
That would be exhilarating, and I would guaranteed probably poop my shorts on the way down because I'm kind of scared of heights and then flying at 150 miles an hour with nothing between you and the ground.
Yeah.
You could do
that. That would be insane. Okay, so Buster, you've been into rock climbing. Leander, I know you've been in some real weird stuff in the last week, haven't you? I don't even know if I should ask you
about
it.
I think it's real weird. I was thinking about that. You know, I don't know if it's really that weird.
It's pretty unusual.
Well, yeah.
For most people.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, for sure. So I started fasting.
AKA not eating food.
Not
giving
eating
food.
Food. Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty weird for I would say the average person to not eat. You haven't eaten for 2 days now.
No.
And I got to say, I've fasted before, too. I've never fasted for 2 days. But you're in a great mood for not having eaten for 2 days.
Yeah, I feel good. I feel really great. I feel really alert. I feel really, you know, sharp. The funny thing is hunger comes in waves. You know, it if you ignore it, it goes away. And then you're not hungry. So if you can just get through the wave of hunger, it's fine. It's totally sustainable.
So now, why did you decide to do this?
Because I want to lose weight. And I've been doing, you know, like I've been running my bike like crazy around, you know, all summer around San Francisco. And that's a good way to lose weight. I lost like 12 pounds in 2 weeks, like racing my bike around. But that was like running at 3 hours a day and then doing, you know, 100, 120 miles at the weekend. You know, it's just too time consuming. And then otherwise, you know, like over the years, I've tried all sorts of other things as well. But, you know, it's hard to shake weight. And so... at this age. So, you know, I'm trying this fasting. It was on Sunday night. I read this thing on Medium. This woman posted a story about how she lost 50 pounds in like 7 months.
So this entire thing was just totally on impulse?
And so I was like, okay.
You just decided to stop eating?
Monday, so I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this now. And so Monday I didn't eat. And, you know, then I ate on Tuesday. And then Wednesday was supposed to be a fast day. And so I didn't eat yesterday. And I got to admit, like, I was a bit sort of zonked out, like, in the evening. Mm-hmm. But that passed, and slept great. You know, woke up this morning feeling great, and thought, okay, I'm not going to eat today. So I'm not eating today either. So I did 2 days in a row. But the way she was doing it was she was fasting for 3 days out of seven. So
wow,
she would fast on Monday, eat Tuesday, fast on Wednesday, eat Thursday, fast on Friday, and then eat at the weekends. And then I started doing some research. So, you know, like the thing that set her off was this documentary that was put out in the UK a couple of years ago, like 3 years ago, by Horizon, by a doctor that did what they call the 5-2 diet. I'm sorry, the 5-2 fast, where you eat for 5 days and you fast for 2 days. And this is a big phenomenon in the UK. I'd read about this before. For the last like 3 or 4 years, you know, like this is a big thing in the UK and Britain. Like a lot of people are doing this. You know, they'll eat like pigs and stuff their faces and get drunk all weekend, but then fast for a couple of days during the week. And, you know, a lot of people report a lot of success with it. Like, not only do you lose weight, but it makes you feel, you know, like it resets all, like, you know, your blood chemistry. So your cholesterol goes down, your blood glucose goes down.
Triglycerides go way down, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, and of course, like, you know, if you look back, like, historically, fasting's like a big part of other cultures, you know, like a big part of Muslim culture.
Like,
you know,
Jewish culture especially, yeah.
Right, but also in the East, in Muslim cultures, in India, you know, like fasting has been around for, you know, forever, as long as mankind has been around. And it's a big cultural and religious and phenomenon, you know. And the only place where you don't eat is, you know, where we don't fast is in cultures like ours, you know, where you can't see stuff in your face.
And we have the exact opposite of fasting. We just constantly pig out the entire time.
And that's the problem, you know, like, because I try to eat healthy, but I just can't, you know. I'd end up stuffing my face, and there's rubbish food all around, you know, everywhere you go. There's donuts and cookies and sweets and candies. You know, it's very difficult, especially with kids in the house, you know, it's really difficult to sort of resist that. So I end up tending, you know, even if I try to eat well during the day, I try to eat a salad, I try to eat a good breakfast, I try to eat a good dinner, you know, I end up stuffing a bunch of rubbish in my face just because it's there and I can't have absolutely no control. So it's funny, you know, like when I'm eating, I have absolutely zero self-control, none. But I find it easier to turn off, you know, like when I decide not to eat, I can easily not eat all day. And it's much easier not to eat all day than it is, you know, not to eat a candy bar when it's sitting there in front of you.
Are you, you must be drinking a lot of water, I'm guessing.
Tea. I'm drinking hot tea.
You're drinking hot tea. Okay. Well, actually that was one of the things I was going to suggest. So I've tried fasting on and off too. And it's hard when you've not eaten for 5-6 hours. If you've never done this before, I mean, you are really hungry. Imagine keeping that going for 24 hours.
It's not hard, though. For me anyway, it's not. It's not at all. Like I said earlier.
Well, you had it easier than I did because I found it to be very difficult. My stomach, I'd have hunger pains and stuff. And one of the things I found that really helped was, A, you got to stay hydrated. You have to drink water constantly. But also is herbal tea, or in Leander's case, Lipton's, black tea.
Right.
It keeps your stomach satiated for whatever reason.
Well, people are saying that, you know, you drink a can of soda water and that can, and it fills up your stomach. So it immediately kills the hunger pangs.
Huh.
And that's actually a good tip, you know, that you know, put something like that to fill your stomach up. And that's what happens with me with a cup of tea.
But are you drinking caffeinated tea?
Yeah. No, it's decaf tea. Sorry. It's
okay. I was going to say, because it kind of you're gonna end up dehydrated. You're gonna end up dead. Is what you're gonna end up. You're not eating and you're dehydrated the whole time. So what happens when you start eating again? You're just gonna gain all the weight back.
Well, I can keep this up. I think, you know, I'm quite happy. I used to fast before, like when I was
keep this up. I'm just gonna not eat anymore.
When I was a teenager, you know, I was reading about the guy that runs Evernote. You know, he I can't remember the guy's name, Libin, or something like that. And you know, it's big in Silicon Valley, and there's actually a big group here in San Francisco. Of fasters, you know, they have a group. They do meetups. They meet up once a month, and it's sort of like the fad diet in Silicon Valley. You know, like where a lot of people will just, you know, it's part of their lifestyle now. They will not eat for a couple of days during the week, or 3 days during the week. And I can totally see that. I can actually feel that. I feel that this is sustainable, and that I can keep it up. And this is what this guy from Evernote was saying. You know, like it's now his lifestyle. He's even more extreme. He won't eat for 8 days in a row.
Wow.
And he lost 80 pounds in 7 months, and he went from being obese and pre-diabetic to slim and he says, and this is what, you know, really resonates with me, is that he's very, very focused, he's very, very productive, he feels great, he does it for fun because he likes the feeling. And I feel like that too, you know, I feel actually, you know, mildly euphoric.
I kind of felt like I was living in the clouds. I mean, I guess it depends on the day, but sometimes I would feel mildly euphoric and sometimes I just felt terrible. And I would, you know, just sit there daydreaming of food. But, yeah, everyone's experience is different, I suppose. It's funny because Kevin Rose, who is big in the tech world, he just released a fasting app.
Right, yeah.
So, and he seems like one of those guys who's always into the newest, like, fad in Silicon Valley. So when he released an app, I should have guessed that it's the new cool thing to do in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, right. It's
to not eat anymore. Plus, it's good for the environment because you're just not eating.
Right.
And you're not peeing, you're not pooping. It's just like... All right, so Leander's into not eating anymore, so he'll be joining us next week, and then the following week he'll be dead. And Lewis will be taking his place. I got to promote one of my favorite things I've been into for like the last month. It's a Twitch streamer by the name of Dr. Disrespect. Spect. Anybody know who he is? Oh man. He's 6'8" of pure man. You know, one of the things our culture needs is more burly men like this guy. He's just a man. You know, when you're around a real man, you're like, you kind of feel intimidated and you get somewhat bashful and you're not really sure what to say because you're in the presence of intense testosterone. I met him in person and that's what it was
who
like. I don't even know what to say. His name
is
Dr. Disrespect. He is a Twitch. He's a Twitch streamer. So he streams mostly these days.
A real man, a Twitch streamer.
Yeah. He streams mostly PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds these days. He is the two-time back-to-back 1993-1994 blockbuster video game champion. And he just brings the domination in a way that I've never seen before. People are intimidated. They're frightened of him. And he has a persona that is larger than any streamer on Twitch. And I met him in person, like I said, and afterwards, when I had some blood work done, my testosterone was at an alarmingly high level, and it's been there ever since, just by being in his presence.
So this is what you're into, this burly guy?
Yeah. I think he might be ex-military. I'm not sure, but he's clearly very dangerous in real life and in the gaming community. And he just streams PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds pretty much all the time. He jumps into other games. And he's just the most entertaining, most ruthless competitor in the online gaming community. And if you've never checked him out, I'm so happy to promote him because he's raised the bar of Twitch streaming to a whole nother level. I mean, there's Twitch streamers, and then there's Dr. Disrespect. He is doing something that no one else in the Twitch community is doing. And he's raising the medium to a whole nother level that no one else has been able to match. So if you want to check him out, I'll include a link in the show notes. I think you're going to find him highly engaging, highly entertaining. You can find him at twitch.tv/ Dr. DR Disrespect. Dr. Disrespect, that's with DR, not the whole word. Not the whole word doctor. And I'll include a link to his channel in the show notes. If you want to be highly entertained, then I recommend that you go check him out. And he's just a glorious exhibit of a man. And his jawline is so sharp, he'll cut
you with
it.
That's just you with a fake mustache.
You got to be careful. Fake mustache?
It's got to be you, right?
No way. There's no way that's fake. I've seen it. I've seen it in person. There is not a chance it's fake. He's the real deal. He's the real McCoy.
Where'd you meet this weirdo?
As they say.
Where'd you meet him?
I met him at PAX in Seattle.
Nerdfest, huh?
Oh, man. It was one of the best experiences of my life. Something I'll never forget. Yeah, just don't watch him with your girlfriend or wife because they'll leave you. Once they see him and they look over and you're sitting there next to them, it's over. Your relationship is over. So just a heads up. Okay. That's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come reach out, say hi, talk about any of the stories that we mentioned on today's show, we're all on Twitter. I'm at Arifon. Buster is BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. This has been the cult cast, the best, most prolific, sexiest 30-minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys and several ladies next time. We've got like 7 ladies that listen to this show, I'll have you know.
You have weird masculine issues,
Marathon? What?
Like, he keeps on going on about this guy's masculinity, and then you just mentioned the three ladies listen to the show, and...
Look at him!
He looks like
look
a
at him.
Fucking weirdo.
Look at that guy. Leander, tell me you're not impressed by the masculine power that exudes from his persona.
Kind of Ron
exactly!
Burgundy,
it's
know,
a fake!
Parody.
It's gotta be a fake mustache!
He's got a fake
There's
mustache
no
on a wig.
I'm telling you, that's not fake. That's the real McCoy. I've seen it up close. I practically tugged on it.
Definitely wearing a wig.
That's not a wig.
But anyone who has a mustache like that is obviously completely f***ing mental.
No, he just gets a lot of good rests. He sleeps in a waterbed. He takes steroids.
Yeah,
I mean, he lives
a
clean lifestyle.
He's worried about his masculinity. He's like trying to broadcast it. He's overcompensating.
No.
Of course he is.
No way. Look at him.
Yeah, he looks really, really f***ing strange.
I think that here's what's happening here, Leander. You're so impressed by him that it caught you off guard. And now you're trying to play it like you're not impressed to protect your own masculinity. Oh my God. Did I just nail it?
No, absolutely not.